Good morning, everybody. Welcome. It's Sunday morning here in London. Lizzie and I from Third Space Coaching are together for week 51 of Turning Towards Life. We are delighted to be here and delighted to have you with us for this ongoing project where we're going to do the same as we have done every week for the last 50 weeks, which is take a rather wonderful source and dive in and talk about it together. So I'm tremendously excited that we have a source written by Lizzie this morning. Thank you, Lizzie.
Oh, well, I wanted to bring something that I wrote this week. And so I wrote something and I wrote it on the plane on the way back from, I was on a trip to Italy with Matthew, my husband. And I was looking through some notes about things that I'd felt in the past, and I was remembering this nothingness thing and how painful it is, and wanting to bring something that really does a bit of shame busting, I think, as well, because I'm not sure this is a place that's often talked about in normal life. And I really feel there's something to be said about the darkness and who we can be with one another. So this is what came out, and I'm really, really happy that I am also going to be in receipt of this. Just before this call started, we were discussing who was going to read it first, and I said I've been fantasizing about Justin reading it so that I can receive the thing that I wrote in a different way, which, as I've learned, happens with this thing, is that basically if Justin reads it to me or anyone else reads it to me, I get to be in receipt of it in a whole different way than writing it. So I'm really glad of that. And I'm not very well, actually. I've got a cold and I had a very bad night's sleep because my whole face was really painful. I think my sinuses are blocked. So I had a real face ache last night that kept me awake. So I'm really grateful to have this to remind me of something other than dealing with my body not being exactly the way that I want it to be and being in a bit of pain. So I'm very happy to be here and ready to bask in your reading.
Well, I'm ready to read, and I want to say thank you again for writing this. It's always such a joy when we get to bring writing by many other people, and then now and again we get to bring writing that's ours. And I think that's it's very joyful for me to do that, to read something of yours. Mm-hmm. And I want to say before I read how up I am, and I know that this is a big part of what this project is for shame busting, that we've been talking quite a lot in recent weeks about how we new ways of talking about what the work of Third Space Coaching is. Mm. And I was thinking about this, I don't know, just on a train last night on my way back from somewhere, that a big part of what we're up to, I think, is encouraging in ourselves and in the world the welcoming of everything that it is to be human, and the undoing of our tendency to push away into the shadows what would really serve us if we were able to talk about it. So here we are doing this with this that you wrote, Lizzie. So I'm going to read it now. So just a reminder for any of you who are with us, you can always find the sources on the week that we're doing it in our Facebook group, which you may be a member of. And then afterwards on our website, which is turningtowards.life. We post all the sources and all the recordings of these conversations there. So if you want to read along with us at some point, one of those two places. So this is Lizzie's piece called The Abyss of Defunctness and the Joy of One Another. There's nothing here, nothing to hold me. And maybe this right here is where all of life comes from. The nothingness that you can't even begin to account for. And yet we're all running around trying to fill ourselves up with stuff or food or experiences or money or speed or status so that we don't have to feel what I'm feeling now. What I am feeling, I will call the abyss of defunctness, like I'm not worth a thing, like I truly am nothing. Like all my strategies for living have failed. All the ways I've tried to make things work are just a collection of thin and useless failed and flawed efforts to have things turn out in ways I think they should. And in this nothingness, I have you, my fellow traveller, my friend, my sister, my brother. There are real beings right here as I feel this, joining me in the abyss as I dare to bear this truth to another who is settled, open, and kind. I glimpse the possibility that even in this state, I am okay because you are here and you didn't run away. If we join with another when we or they are in the abyss, the forsaken, or so it feels, place, the fruits of relatedness are born. In the loving, accepting gaze of another who's not trying to fix or change the situation, the parts that we've rejected become welcomed. The opinions of ourselves that hold hurt and shame are held warmly, gently, in an open heart, body, and mind. The unacceptable becomes part of the conversation. How do we face ourselves in all our glorious opposites, our brokenness, our wounds, our joys, our hurts, our truth? Maybe this kind of loving, accepting connection is the answer. Imagine a world where our appetite to be seen is satiated, where our wish to be witnessed is fulfilled, our hunger to be seen is met with just what we need. On the contrary, if we're repeatedly unseen, maybe that's what we become. If we are repeatedly blind to one another's goodness, others then become this. We perpetuate unseenness. By unseenness, I mean a presence that doesn't know, see, or feel itself. A presence that has no idea of who or what it is because no one is here now or was there then to mirror back to us the bright and shining truth of our being. Maybe the ones who welcomed us didn't have it to show us. Maybe we didn't have within us as part of the welcome of the ones we once held. It's possible that it wasn't in their eyes when they greeted us. Their bodies didn't tell us who we were, so we didn't get answered in our call for love, and by then we'd forgotten who we truly were. It slowly slipped away as we became more and more embroiled in this physical world. We didn't get received in our wish to bring love, because the space in the people who welcomed us wasn't cultivated to see or receive us. They had not received this space from those who welcomed them. And maybe this is the game changer, the time in our own personal histories where we come together and change the story and bring to one another what we so long for. Maybe the ultimate act of growing up is becoming this loving space, even when we don't know how. I wonder about softly edging into the vulnerability of feeling like we have not got it to give, and then doing our best to bring it alive from the nothing that we find in that place that feels so empty. From a space of emptiness, of not knowing, we begin drawing on something that feels real, and we begin offering it to the soul in front of us, and we might even offer it to ourselves when we get practiced at it. All the ways we feel wounded, deadened, deaf to the call of this particular life, lost and afraid, this togetherness makes it okay, because togetherness means we can learn from it all, make it our path. When someone is there with us to live this life alongside us and show us again and again in our darkest moments that it's good to be alive, because there is our togetherness, it shows there's hope and purpose here. Simply because we're us, because we're connected, and our nature is to love, and we're here together, and this is our path. We're bringing each other alive. Together we waken into life. In separation, we stay asleep, and our true nature remains hidden.
So I'm going to read from towards the end a little bit because it's really long. And maybe this is the game changer, the time in our own personal histories where we come together and change the story and bring to one another what we so long for. Maybe the ultimate act of growing up is becoming this loving space, even when we don't know how. I wonder about softly edging into the vulnerability of feeling like we have not got it to give, and then doing our best to bring it alive from the nothing that we find in that place that feels so empty. From a space of emptiness, of not knowing, we begin drawing on something that feels real, and we begin offering it to the soul in front of us. And we might even offer it to ourselves when we get practiced at it. All the ways we feel wounded, deadened, deaf to the call of this particular life, lost and afraid. This togetherness makes it okay, because togetherness means we can learn from it all, make it our path. When someone is there with us to live this life alongside us and show us again and again in our darkest moments that it is good to be alive because there is our togetherness, it shows there is hope and purpose here. Simply because we're us, because we're connected and our nature is to love, and we're here together, and this is our path. We are bringing each other alive. Together we awaken into life. In separation we stay asleep and our true nature remains hidden.
Gosh, there's so much in here, Lizzie.
Mm.
I'm very grateful for it.
Mm.
And aside from saying thank you to you for writing it so beautifully and clearly and powerfully, there are lots of parts that are touching me all simultaneously, but the place that I want to start with is in responding is by trying to see if I can say something about this connection that you make between the cycle of I feel empty and broken and nothing and ashamed of my emptiness, brokenness and nothingness. And what I most need then is to be met by another. And how we, in our shame about all of this and our fear about this, hold ourselves back from meeting one another when we're this way. I know this so much in my work with my coaching clients. And I know that this is not just about being a coach. This is what you're writing about is something very much more prior to that, of just being a human being. But how many times I've imagined that I had nothing to offer because I wasn't together. That somehow I need to be together, competent, know what I'm doing in order to be of service to another human being, and how alienating that is. Right when I'm with another person, if I'm in that dynamic, I'm alienated and far from myself and far from them and trying really hard, I don't know, to cover up. And what you've written here is a reminder. First, it seems to me, of this paradox that the place to meet one another from is the place of our own knowing I'm broken and failing and far off where I imagine I ought to be and empty and that says something very, very profound and important about what it is to be a human being at the heart of this. Because I think this is the last part where I'm heading as I'm speaking, is that what we are is both light and beauty and glory and all of that, and is emptiness. The emptiness isn't like an excuse to speak from.
Mm.
Oh, I can speak even though I'm so empty. It's also the background to everything.
Mm. Yeah, and I think that's what I was kind of meaning at the beginning, which is that starting from the nothing here, the immediate inquiry came of, but maybe this is where it all comes from. Like that they're really close to one another, the birthplace of all of life, and this feeling that we want to run from. You know, what if they're like either very close together or one and the same thing? And to allow ourselves, whatever the discomfort is, to be in a place and let it be itself within our awareness for long enough to know something more about it other than I want to run. You know, let I want to run be here. And what is it? Also simultaneously be here. And I think that's really hard to do, by the way. And also, you know, to be clear, like I write this from experience, like I'm not writing this from a concept or something. And I think that's the other thing as well, is even the vulnerability of writing this, I thought, oh my gosh, I'm going to write this and everyone's going to think I'm, you know, ruined or off the wall or something. But I know that reaction in me. So I think, oh no, that's okay. You can just have that reaction and carry on, because it's in service of something other than whether people think you look good or not. It's not that thing that you're trying to serve. It's something else. But in that is the very thing that we're talking about, which is, if I say that I am acquainted very well with feeling like I'm nothing and defunct and worthless, there's a real vulnerability in that. And I know that it might not also be very aligned with the image that I tend to present in the world either. And it's not all of me. Like, there's a lot of joy and there's a lot of other things. And there's this. And it feels like, in my experience, what happens is that if I allow myself to know this place, to be in this place, it serves me in so many ways, like how to be with another person in this place, or how to let emptiness infuse my fullness, and to always remember the spectrum, however high I am, however well I am, to know that the opposites also exist all the time, and to be the third space that holds all of those polarities. And so it feels like it's an education always to touch into this place. And if I can orient it to being like I'm being educated, like I'm being taught, I'm being given things, I'm being given an experience for my good somehow, for my learning, it's like it doesn't feel so horrible. It still feels horrible, but there's something else other than horribleness in it with me. And in a way, that's the part where I say, you know, I have you, my fellow traveler, my brother and my sister and my friend. And those can be humans. And I find that extremely important. But I also know that there's many unseen things that are present, that maybe people who don't have bodies in a way that I can see them anymore, or other beings of goodness that support me, and the hundreds of people that are probably praying for me somewhere and holding me in their heart as in all their good intention. There's so much happening that I don't know about. And in that openness, it's an openness to the grief of the nothingness, but it's also an openness that reaches far beyond my habitual way of thinking about things or feeling. So it's a kind of double whammy all the time being in that space, which is that it's teaching me a lot, and it hurts, and it's opening me to all things, not just difficult things and not just the good things, but to all of what the spectrum of life is. And that's why I think that the real gift of allowing ourselves to be stumped, to be lost, to not know what to do next, right there is there's so much gold, there's so much value, there's so much opportunity. And yet it's the very thing that we try and run from.
It's an extraordinary paradox that when we feel like we're far from something, we very often try to run further instead of returning to, there's this there's such a beautiful and important image and invitation that you make in this, which is that what us human beings really deeply long for is that somebody else will see us as we are. And of course, including all of the light and hope and possibility and all of the emptiness and lostness and nothingness. And that so many of our troubles come because we didn't always get met this way when it really mattered, when we were forming our sense of what it is, our early sense of what it is to be a human being, maybe just because the people around us have never been met that way themselves. And so the act of turning towards our own, this nothingness that you talk about, and seeing one another in the midst of that is a great act of redress for ourselves and others. And it's what I think we've spoken about this before, but what's coming to mind for me is this thing that Francis Weller, whose work we talked about way back, week three or four of this, says, that what we really need is to be greeted by 100 shining eyes and smiling faces when we arrive. And mostly because, for all the reasons you say, mostly that doesn't happen for most of us, even when the people who greet us love us. Because we're all running.
Mm-hmm.
And what occurred to me is, I don't know if it means the same to you, Lizzie, and this is the wonderful thing about having a piece of writing that we can sort of both come at from our different angles. It struck me whilst I was reading this that the emptiness, the nothingness that you talk about, which one way you could talk about it is all the ways I failed, all the ways I'm feeling ashamed, all the ways I've fallen short. But another way of talking about it is the ground of our being. And we come from a profound nothingness that we can hardly understand. And 5 minutes later, we return to it with this brief span of activity and relating and everything in between. So maybe one of the reasons why we run from this is not just because it feels like in all the setups of our culture somehow I failed because I'm not busy and consuming and all of that, but maybe also something very profound, which is that we run from it because it reminds us of it. It's an essentially truthful place, is this brief flowering of aliveness that we are. It grows out of this. That also means that what it grows out of is something extraordinarily fertile and alive itself. So all of this is like, it's an invitation back into relationship with our wholeness, but also into seeing one another way beyond the ways that we, the sort of superficial ways that we most often encounter one another as we go through life.
And it's reminding me, I think this was, somebody said this to me a long time ago when I was starting to consider working with people. And they said to me, the less you judge, the more you see. And the more you are able to be clear about what's going on in front of you. And we think that that's our judgment. It's telling us all these, this is great information to work off and to act from. And the thing that also stops us seeing in another and ourselves as well is who somebody really is or what a situation really is. And as you're speaking, it's just reminding me of that, of the way that all my typical ways of assessing things could be the hugest and are probably the biggest barrier to really seeing the thing that you're talking about, which is somebody's essence, somebody's originalness, somebody's given spirit that's nothing to do with what's happened to them or what their life looks like on a kind of material, practical level, but is their who-ness. And that seen-ness is connected, I think, into what our originalness is. And when we feel like someone's making contact with that part of us, the most significant part of us, the deepest part of us, the the foundation of what this is to be human. It's a connection into like the elixir of life, and it feels good to be human because I'm being seen for the most significant part of me, which is the ground of my being, which is the thing that's here in spite of everything. It's my essentialness, my only me-ness. And it's to be able to look at what the blocks are to seeing that in other people and ourselves. It probably has to start with ourselves. It's a different human life, that life, than believing everything I think, believing everything I judge, believing everything that I have learned to assess in others or in situations, and finding an opening to entertain the idea and to try and live into seeing things with an open heart and mind, in spite of all the ways that I judge, which will happen and does happen and probably won't ever not happen, but at least to see that for what it is, rather than think that that's true. Think that what I think about is truth, and be open to something deeper emerging if I can recognize my judgment for what it is and allow it to be there, but not think that it's correct or justified or what's going to get me anywhere, and see what it is to open into a deeper, more elusive reality than the grossness of my judgments and my assessments of what I think is possible or who I think somebody is or whether something's right or wrong.
Yeah. So this struck me yesterday. I was visiting a potential future university with my oldest son yesterday, and we were doing the tours, and everybody who was there was so warm and welcoming and genuine, which was really lovely. And at the same time, every now and again, what I noticed people doing, which I know I so easily do, was saying something about the world that came from, I think, from an inner sense of self-judgment. And the example that I'm thinking of is we were asking about, well, how does this place compare to some other place where you're not? And the person who was guiding us around would say, well, you know, of course, if you would say something really judgmental about another university, which, as I reflected and as I noticed, the part in me that does that is that dismisses something that I'm not in the middle of, I realized that very often what I'm doing is I'm coming from a place of self-judgment. Like if I say something that puts somebody or something else down, I won't have to face the fact that I've got all of these giant judgments about myself, and then I won't have to feel the emptiness and the shame that's underneath it. And that way I get to prop myself up a little bit, but I also get to be distanced from other people, and I can feel safer and safer and safer. And when we drop down into this place that you're talking about, which is, you know what, right in the middle of something, right in the middle of all of this, there's this extraordinary nothingness that I cannot name or get a handle on, and it worries me and it frightens me, maybe because, as we were talking about before, maybe because it's actually the something from which we come and to which we return. And it keeps us all of that. So I mean, even before our judgments of other people, our self-judgment that arises from this just keeps us at a distance all the time. And it's such an act of both courage and love to let go all of that and to meet ourselves and other people exactly as we are. That's one of the very beautiful things you say in this, which is that sometimes the most powerful and important thing to do is to meet one another just where we are without any attempt to change anything. And it's the meeting is the radical intervention. It's the radical invitation, I think, is actually what I wanted to say. Just meeting is a radical invitation.
Yeah.
From what we've been doing and all the ways we've been far away from ourselves. And for sure, most of us don't do enough of this. Like, or said a different way, there's such a vast possibility to meet in that place, in that way, which opens up deep, deep healing, and then many things that could happen in the world that really matter come from there too.
Mm. And I noticed, Justin, maybe I've said this before, but I'm so surprised that people don't run a mile. Every time I bring my vulnerability, every time I say something that I've done, I think, oh shit, this is the one. Everyone's going to bolt and I'm going to be left all alone, which is basically the way I'm judging myself, which is like, I would run if I told me this, but it's me, so I can't, because I'm in the experience.
Yeah.
And so far, nobody's run.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's always the thing that moves me so much, is that when I remember in Denmark a couple of years ago, we were in a workshop and I admitted something. I felt like it was an admission, a kind of disclosure about something that I felt really like I was manipulative or something. It was quite a kind of twisted darkness I could find in my personality in the context of relationships. And everyone's like, mm-hmm. And just like, let me say it. And I was like, what? So you're not going to cast me out and tell me to leave or discard me as a person or something? And then in the staying that they were doing, I let myself feel whatever there was to be felt about having that part of me be a real part that I wanted to say something about. And then in that feeling, I got to process something and there was healing in it. And not because I did some huge thing or I, you know, went back and did some re-giving something to someone, or, you know, I didn't do anything. It was just letting it be in the air and letting it be seen and known by other people, and that they stayed. It had this massive, powerful effect that I could really access. And I cried for ages and just let it be there and feel the regret and feel the defunctness and the part of me that was actually not pleasant and or doing anyone any favors. And it was really okay. And it's always a surprise. No matter how many times that happens, it's always a surprise to me. And yet I'm gathering momentum and faith all the time that I can say these different parts of myself, and it's not going to be rejected, and it's not going to be shamed, and it's not going to be pushed away. But I also think that as people who are up to this, it's important to know who you're with as well. And in one way, I think that's what Third Space is about, is letting everybody know what kind of people we are, so that even if we don't meet everybody or talk to everybody individually, and also maybe we will, anyone who comes into our field knows that this is the field, because we are it in ourselves, as in we are disclosive, we are on a path of feeling ashamed and doing something about it by being together. And the invitation is to join in that and see if it can be a gift to other people as well, not just us and the people who've either been on our programs or in our little community or even in our Facebook group. You know, it's like, how do we widen the word so that there's a feeling of safety energetically, and even just listening to these things, maybe people listen on YouTube or on the website and we have no even clue about it, but people somewhere know that there are people who, by saying all this stuff that we're saying, are welcome to them in all of their stuff that they think is unacceptable to other human beings.
You keep on teaching us, Lizzie, that the best way to do this is together.
Mm.
And that's what I'm really appreciating right now, is that we can, there's a way to wallow in our sense of brokenness and nothingness when we do it on our own.
Yeah.
And then there's a whole other way, which is to be in relationship. And I get what you're saying is that it doesn't always have to be in relationship with another human being that's here. Something you said earlier, there are lots of ways of being in relationship, but probably the most powerful, the the way of being in relationship to this that has most blessings is to be with one another, so that when you say to other people that you can see your own manipulativeness in relationships, other people can go, uh-huh, like, I get that, I know. I see that in you and I see that in me, because it is what it is to be a human being, and we can possess ourselves, I think, maybe, is, or welcome our, welcome all of it.
So I'm just seeing the time, and it's probably time to end, but I'm just extraordinarily grateful for this conversation and grateful for the chance to kind of get this thing out, if that makes sense. Like, I noticed the feeling in me of, like, I know the piece that I ended up writing was quite long, but I felt like I couldn't say one part without the other, and there were lots of parts, and I'm just appreciating that we can understand it together, and that it's something real that can be understood, and I'm really grateful for that. So we will be back next week, Sunday, 9 a.m, with a source that Justin's going to choose for us on Friday. And we will be at week 52, which means that maybe Justin's going to bring a source that's some kind of wild celebration of doing this for a whole year, which I can't believe that we've done, by the way. I'm completely flabbergasted that we're nearly at week 52. And I'm so grateful that we've carried on through, by hook or by crook, we've done it. And that's just really wonderful to me. So I'm really grateful. I'm grateful for everybody being with us, and that there are people who watch this and appreciate this is a very big gift. So I'm very grateful. So everybody, we'll see you next week at 9 o'clock here on Facebook. And thank you very, very much for listening. This has been the Third Space project called Turning Towards Life.
We'll see you next week. Bring birthday cake.
Yes, exactly. Bye.
Bye-bye.